This is an interview with Amy Becker and Mary Lecklider. Amy graduated from Lindenwood in 1908. This interview is taking place live in the studios from KCLC-FM on Wednesday, February 16, 1977. I'm Joni Dodson. Amy, I'm just really pleased to have you down here.
Well, I'm surely happy to be here today, for I feel almost that Lindenwood was my second home. I've heard so much about it all during my life, and when I was very young, and we continued to have a contact with Lindenwood all through the years, and even after I graduated, everyone was so nice to me, and I came out to the concerts and everything, and I really appreciated it very much.
Well, it's a pleasure to have you here and to have you joining in, and Mary, it's good to have you here with us today. And Amy, Miss Amy, you said that Lindenwood was like your second home. Can you tell us?
Yes, I will.
How you got involved with Lindenwood?
Yes, since my parents had both passed away when I was 10 years old, my sister and I lived with our grandmother, aunt, and uncle. My grandmother knew Mrs. Sibley very well and often told us that Major Sibley had acquired 200 arpents of land from her relative, John Cook, which he named Lindenwood, and where later Mary Easton Sibley established her school. She also attended Mrs. Sibley's Sunday school class and loved her very much. My grandmother lived with her parents a few miles south of Lindenwood, which is now Highway 4061, where they operated a tavern and served light refreshments, and where the farmers of this community stopped when walking their pigs and turkeys to the St. Louis market. And it was to this tavern that Mrs. Sibley came to teach Sunday school on Sunday afternoons.
Miss Amy, is that tavern still in existence?
The tavern is back of the house. It's on the highway.
Oh.
And they built a house in front of it.
Oh,
it's
yes.
A two-story brick home, and you can see it, and it's well-preserved.
Oh, fine.
Mm-hmm.
Miss Amy, was there not a Sunday school in St. Charles at that time?
Well, you see, this was in the county, and I do not think there was much of a Sunday school here then.
Well, actually, I read that Mrs. Sibley was the one who started the Sunday school in the Presbyterian church here.
I see. Mm-hmm. Well, I was a Lutheran, so we did not have it. But they gathered together on Sunday afternoons and had a little talk, you know. But I do not think that it was called Sunday school.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And in the winter, when it was quite cold and the snow had drifted on the roads, the children wondered, will she come today? But as they waited, they heard the tinkling of sleigh bells, and then Mrs. Sibley and her helpers in their high-backed sleigh had arrived. And they were happy, for she not only taught religion, but in so doing, they also learned the English language, for heretofore, they only were instructed in the German, as it was a German community. My aunt attended Lindenwood from 1878 to 80, when Miss Mary Jewell was president. My sister...
Miss Amy, let's interrupt right here, because isn't Miss Jewell the only woman president?
She was the only woman president,
yes,
that I knew of.
Yes.
Of course, I didn't know her, but I was told, and since then there have been no women presidents.
Did they like her very much?
They loved her. They thought her very good, and they had a nice course in history and geography, the regular grammar course, you know.
Yes.
And writing was so difficult those days, but she insisted that they write real well. So she gave them a sentence, and they had to write a whole page of the one sentence until they were perfect.
Well, good.
Yes. So I know that my aunt still had some of those.
Did she?
Yes, she did. And it was real nice.
Now, she was the lady principal before she became president, wasn't she?
Yes, I thought she was. I don't know that, but...
And a lady principal in those days is like the dean of women today.
Yes, that's right. Mm-hmm. Well, they liked her, and my aunt was very proud of her 3 years at Lindenwood.
Oh, yes.
My sister attended Lindenwood for 5 years when Dr. Reeser was president. And he also was here for about 5 years, and then he left.
Oh, yeah.
Yes, it was. She graduated in 1903. So that was 1898.
Just
that's
before
right.
Dr.
1898 Ayers. 1898 to 1903. Mm-hmm. That's right. Yeah. While I entered in 1903 for 5 years when Dr. Ayers was president, there were about 80 to 100 students and 4 or 5 day students. It was a small school, but a very happy one. We had regular courses, special courses in art, music, and others.
What were your regular courses?
Well, the regular courses that I took were grammar and geography and history, English, and I had to have 9 years of foreign languages, and the mathematics went up to trigonometry.
What foreign language did you...
I had 5 years of Latin and 4 of German.
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm. You spoke
the
German in your
was
home.
Easy for me,
yes.
Because we spoke the
yes.
German at home.
Mm-hmm.
And I had no trouble with that. Mm-hmm. But that was easy. Latin was 5 years.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Sammy, you said there were almost 100 students on campus. Was just Sibley Hall here, and did everyone live in Sibley?
Sibley Hall was the only one here, and later there was the next... is that called?
Jubilee
Hall. That was, I think, the last year of my attendance at Lindenwood.
I read that Sibley Hall was called Lindenwood Hall until 1909. Do you remember that?
No, I don't.
You don't.
No,
you always called it Sibley Hall.
That's
well,
right, when we came. When
yes,
I
it's
came
possible
up.
That some of the stories are wrong.
Yes, well, I may be wrong yes. also, but... we called it
Sibley
Hall.
Hall.
Mm-hmm.
Sammy, did you have your classes in Sibley also?
Yes, we had everything there. Mm-hmm. It was just the one building, you see. Mm-hmm. But we did have a small, we had a this regular course I told about, what they had. Then there was a small gym. That was another little building. And we had basketball and a tennis court outdoors. Mm-hmm. We enjoyed parties and receptions, and every year we observed Arbor Day when each class planted a linden tree. When I was a junior, our class thought it would be fun to have a yearbook, as it would not be as busy in our junior year as in our senior year. We checked the records of the college and found there had been a paper in the 1800s called Linden Leaves. This appealed to us, so we got busy with the first yearbook, which read, "To Mary Easton Sibley's memory, in loving recognition of her gifts and services in founding and fostering this school and impressing upon it her high ideals, this volume of the Linden Leaves of Lindenwood College is affectionately dedicated by the junior class of 1908. Our class graduated in June 1908. There were 24 girls in the class, 5 of whom are still living."
Isn't that a remarkable...
It is, they're not all so well.
No.
But they are living, and I have contact with most of them.
Mary Statler White is one of them.
Yes, that's right. She's one of them.
And
then there is Elizabeth Richards. She was Whitmore.
Oh, yes.
And Lil Urban Strasser and Mary Barton. Mm-hmm. I don't know who the name is right now. She's down south.
Do most of them live in this area?
I live here just about a few miles down on high.
Yeah, I knew you lived real close.
Yes, the others are all scattered.
Yes. This is White is in Marissa, Illinois.
Mm-hmm.
And her daughter came to Lindenwood and graduated and was the head resident at Butler when I was dean of students.
That's right.
So...
she was a lovely person.
Lovely. She is a lovely person. Miss Amy, could you tell us a little about Mr. Ayers' personality, what you thought about him?
Well,
we don't know very much about him.
No, I don't. Oh, you mean you don't know too much about him. Well, I don't know. He was, I think Mrs. Heron, who was the principal of that time, ran the school as much as Dr. Ayers.
Oh.
That's the way I felt.
Oh, yes.
I don't know, but he was easy to get along with, and I think they had no trouble with him at all. I mean, the girls liked him,
yes.
I think, but they were very strict in those days. No one could come downtown, which we call downtown, without permission, and they had to have a chaperone. And when they visited my home over the weekend, in. They always had to have special permission from their parents.
Think of that, just a few blocks away.
It's a few blocks away, but they had to have special permission. When my sister came out here, they came down all the time. They weren't as strict.
Yes.
Dr. Reeser wasn't as strict as the Dr. Ayers and Mrs. Heron.
Oh, yes.
Do you know, Amy, I believe that Colonel Butler was around at that time. Did you know Colonel Butler?
Yes, I knew Colonel Butler. He came quite often. Dr. Ayers and Dr. Nichols were friends of Colonel Butler, and they interested him in the college. And in so doing, he was so interested that he gave us quite a sum of money, and we hailed him all the time.
He made possible Jubilee Hall,
yes,
which is now Ayers Hall.
That's right.
Just before Dr. Romer came.
That's right, and we always were happy when they came. We got dressed up and we had ball games and different things, you know.
That's what I was going to ask you about, Miss Amy. From the things that I've read and the research I've done, it talked about, like, the day that Colonel Butler came, it was almost like it was a holiday or something.
Yes, it was a holiday. We had a whole day and we devoted it to games and different things, you know, and we had a good time. Mm-hmm. And we were at school. We often went to St. Louis also, but we were well chaperoned. We went to see the concerts and good plays and things like that.
How did you go to St. Louis in those days?
We went by train.
Oh.
And in 1904, we had a streetcar.
Yes.
And then we took the streetcar. Streetcar took us about an hour to Wellston and from Wellston downtown to the theaters.
Did you go to the reunion in the... Or did you go to the World's Fair in 1904?
Yes, I did go. I was 13 years
old
then, and we had quite a time of it. I remember one day that the streetcars were always so very, very crowded, and I was young. I got on a streetcar first. Well, my sister, she often had Lindenwood girls with her. They followed, and this one Lindenwood girl and I got a seat. We each took one seat, and I sat on the outside. And I wanted to save the seat for my sister. And a big buxom lady came along there, and she pushed me over. And I almost flew out of the window. I said, I've been saving this seat for my sister. She says, get over there.
Oh.
And
oh,
I almost flew out of the window. And we didn't dare laugh because I was afraid I'd get hit.
I know.
It was really funny. It was so crowded from Wellston on,
yes,
you see. They all scrambled for that one streetcar.
Yeah.
And it ran, I don't quite remember, but every half hour or every hour.
Oh, yeah.
So that was why it was so crowded. It
would take you quite a while to get in town those days.
It really
Miss Amy, what were the rules concerning men visitors or when you were in school? Were you allowed to have any visitors?
You mean at school?
Uh-huh.
Yes, they were allowed to have visitors. I don't know just how that was. You see, they were boarders while I was a day scholar. And I stayed out here at night when they had different concerts and things sometimes, and I couldn't get home late at night. And I stayed with them on Halloween dances and maypole dances and things like that.
Now, did boys come to those dances, or
did they just dance with the girls?
With,
but to the receptions... we had a military school in St. Charles at that time, and for the receptions, which were usually dull for girls, we were very happy ones then because it's the only time we got to see the boys. And then they made dates.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I think I was fortunate because I was in the city and knew most of these boys. In fact, I played tennis with them, you know. So then they had, in turn, had their reception, and we visited the military academy.
How did you get to and from school, Amy?
I walked, and it wasn't so far. I enjoyed the walk.
What about the cold weather when it was snowing?
Well, I made it. Yes, and often the express man would come and deliver packages here during the noon hour, and I'd hop on the express wagon and take me down, go down my way and let me off.
I wanted to ask you if you remembered Louise Thompson Crandall, who taught.
Yes, I remember her well.
And she was the one that wrote the Lindenwood
Hymn.
Yes,
she did write it. Mm-hmm. And we used it in a very long time.
Yes.
Yes.
Well, we hope we can still have it sung at the sesquicentennial.
Oh, yes. I brought it along with
Did
me
you?
Today.
Good.
A copy of it.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I suppose you have it, of course, but she was here quite a while.
She must have been a very remarkable person.
She was, yes. She was.
And her daughter was here, too.
Yes, her daughter was here. Mm-hmm. And they were both here when I was here.
Oh, yes.
Mm-hmm.
Miss Amy, do you remember any of your teachers?
Well, yes, I remember. We had a German teacher, Latin, Miss Strelo and Miss Irwin, and oh, I can't remember all of them anymore. I brought a book with me, but it isn't right here.
Okay.
I mean, a real book.
Was there anyone that was here that was really, that you really got along with well and that you enjoyed their classes or you tried to take more classes for them?
You mean that didn't get along or did?
No, that you did get along with. That you really liked.
Your favorite teacher.
My favorite teacher? Well, I don't know. I liked my favorite mathematics teacher. She was Miss Irwin. She was a very lovely person. And Miss Strelo. Miss Irwin, I also took physics from her. And she would say, "You're all right." She says, "You're fine, but your examples are wobble-jointed."
How old were you, Miss Amy? You know,
I entered at 13.
13,
yes.
And so you graduated 5 years later.
Yes, that's right.
Mm-hmm.
Was
it
I was
that
about
time,
18 because my birthday was in the winter.
Yes, it was sort of like a seminary
yes,
then,
that's
wasn't
right.
It?
It was like a seminary. And later I took several courses in sewing and swimming.
Oh.
Came out here. That was interesting. Mm-hmm. Always had contact with her. It was very nice.
Yes.
I have had the privilege of knowing many fine presidents and their wives and many, many friends as I live so near the campus. And it is my wish that the colleges continue to grow and may there be many Mary Easton Sibleys in the graduating classes, and I might add, many major Sibleys.
We're glad you're including the men.
Well, yes, it wouldn't be good without it, would it?
I was wondering what had kept your interest alive in Lindenwood all these years.
Well, all these different contexts.
Just the contexts.
And the presidents were always nice to send us invitations to all the concerts and everything. And that was wonderful. And I think the city really should be proud of the colleges here because they were also included. And always went out as much as we could to these concerts.
Now, while you're here, there's one other memory that we can't find. We understand that Mrs. Sibley had a piano that had a drum and a fife connected.
Oh.
Did you ever see it?
I saw the piano, but I didn't know they had a drum and a fife to it.
Well, it did. This is what she played with for the Indians.
Mm-hmm.
And where is the piano? Do you know?
I don't know. Isn't it in Sibley Hall?
The organ. There's an organ in Sibley Hall.
Well, there was a piano in Sibley Hall because I know there was because when we had the landing of the pilgrims, we covered that piano with to make it look like a stone or a rock. So, of course, I know that.
Yeah.
And it was there for a long time. And it was, as I remember, it was a black sort of square piano.
Oh. Mm-hmm. Well, maybe we have it somewhere in the attics or something.
Maybe.
It's something we should look for.
Yes, that's what they said. Mm-hmm. That was Mrs. Sibley's
piano.
Miss Amy, you've seen probably more than anyone the changes here at Lindenwood. Lindenwood going to a college, Lindenwood growing into the evening college and the business program, accepting men. Do you see that as being good? Are you happy that you're...
Well, at first I was not happy, but I think I'm very happy about it now because so many other schools are doing it, and I think it's progress. And I think they have very, very many different, courses now. And that's so interesting. I mean, when I came out here, I would have liked a business course because my sister and I were alone in the world, and my aunt always said, "You must learn that." I was a girl who was more interested in athletics, and she'd say, "Come in here, and we'll have to learn how." And that would have been fine for me because it would have been a great help. And, of course, I'm too old to take it up now.
You're never too old.
Well, but then They have these courses now, and I think they're wonderful.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I had something else I was going to ask, and it just, what about, you've seen, I guess, the campus grow. Can you tell me something about what the campus was like when you were here?
Yes, when these new buildings were here, we called it the Point. There was this one little cottage here, and that was used by one of the residents. And that's where we planted most of our linden trees, so I suppose you cannot find too many here now because they have all been taken down to make room for these buildings. And I remember that we had many class fights in those days, and I took the owl, which was our class mascot, down to our house. But they found it out, and they said they must be on the campus. So one day, two military boys and one of my friends and I came, and we planted that mascot, the owl, which was about, I suppose, 3 feet long, on the campus under a cedar tree. So it was on the campus now, and they couldn't find it. And when commencement came, we tried to find that owl, and we finally found it, and we smoked a pipe of peace then.
Oh.
and had a good time.
Yeah.
So I still have that owl at home. He's not very good condition, but I still have it, and I also have the pennant at home because I was near the college, and that's why they said I should keep it.
Yes.
There was then a lot of class rivalry when you were here?
Very much. There was so much rivalry that they, to get our colors higher than anyone else, you know. I brought a carpenter out one day because Dr. Ayers said, you must not climb that high. So I brought a carpenter out, and he started to plant our colors on the building, and they began tearing at him, and his sleeves came out of his coat.
Oh, dear.
So that was the end of it.
Yeah.
There was no more.
No more rivalry.
No more rivalry.
You talked about the traditions with Arbor Day. Were there any other special days like that were set up that you had?
Well, I think it was set up sometimes by the government. I mean, during the papers, wasn't it? As I remember, and then we try to have it on that day as much as possible.
Right. Well, I mean, were there any other special days that you celebrated every year?
Like the girls do the Mrs. Sibley's ghost. You didn't have Mrs.
No,
Sibley's
we
ghost
didn't have
in those
that.
Days.
No, we did not. We honored her, and that was all.
Yes.
I mean, we had no ghosts at that time. That is, not that I remember. The girls at the Borders may have had something, but I don't remember. See, I wasn't always out here.
No.
And then at night, sometimes they'd have little parties.
And Founders Day had not started yet, had
it? No, it started about the last year I was here.
Oh, yes.
Mm-hmm. And that was very interesting. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that's when they really began to honor Dr. and Mrs. Sibley.
That's right.
I mean, Mrs. Sibley and Major Sibley.
That's right. Mm-hmm. And that's when the Colonel Butler also gave quite a sum of money to the different buildings, you know.
Wasn't it about your time that they began to be very much interested in the Alumni Association?
Yes, they were.
Mm-hmm. And you began to have reunions?
Yes, we had reunions. I know at first I was a treasurer of one of them, and we wrote to different girls, you know, at the Alumni, and asked them for different memberships.
Oh, yes.
And we also had no membership in St. Louis, I mean, in St. Charles, no meetings, but we had them in St. Louis, and we'd go down quite often.
Oh.
There were about four or five of us would go down, and we met at different homes.
Mm-hmm.
And they still have that St. Louis Linden
Club.
Oh,
yes, Club. Very strong.
And I remember some of them.
Mm-hmm.
And my sister's group, you know, they were older than I, and they would always be nice to me. Oh, for so long, and after my sister passed away, they still wrote to me.
Oh.
Which was very interesting.
Yes,
mm-hmm. I suppose they're all gone now.
Well, Miss Amy, I thank you for coming down. You've told me more than I think I found in the libraries and
yeah,
stacks, and it's much more interesting than going through all the books.
Oh, well,
And I hope we have you around, have you down here again sometime soon, and I hope I'll see you during the sesquicentennial weekend.
All right, I think you will.
I think we should say, didn't you contribute quite considerably to the organ that's in Sibley Hall?
Well, yes, some, not too much, but some.
She really spearheaded that, though. I've heard that ever since I've been here. Very grateful.
Talking about her involvement and stuff, that just the fact that she's been around, that she's contributed quite a bit, at least just memory-wise, and trying to get things going here. Mm-hmm. And we thank you, Miss Amy.
Well, thank you. Mm-hmm. So you want this?
Yes, I certainly do. Mm-hmm. That's just great.
You can improve on it.
This is an interview with Dr. Anna Harrison. Dr. Harrison attended Lindenwood in the early 30s, and she has just been elected president of the American Chemical Society. Dr. Harrison will be interviewed by Dr. John Borman, chairman of the chemistry department, and myself, Joni Dodson. This interview is taking place Sunday, February 6, 1977, from the production facilities at KCLC-FM. Go through and explain to you some of the things or ask you some of the technical questions, and then when I don't understand, I'll jump in and find out what's going on.
All right, let me ask you one question first. Are you going to edit the tape, or are you going to let the thing stand as it is?
Well, the tape will be edited we're going to keep it in total for the archives, but it will be edited for everything that goes over the air or goes into our files or anything.
All right. The reason I ask is you sometimes, you know, if it's not going to be edited, you're a little more careful about what you say in the way of inane comments in there.
Right. Dr. Harrison, could I ask you to speak up just a little bit so I can get a good level on you on the tape?
Okay. What happens is that I tend to let the telephone drift away. I mean, the way I'm holding it. You may have to remind me to put it back sometimes.
Okay.
How are you now?
It's real good.
Okay, fine.
Dr. Borman?
Yes, I'm all set. Dr. Harrison, you've just been elected president of the American Chemical Society, and for the benefit of our listeners, I wonder if you would describe the American Chemical Society.
Well, technically, I've just been elected president-elect. If you please, your sequence proposition. And as of January 77, I became chairman-elect, which in many organizations would be sort of equivalent to, became president-elect, which in many organizations would be equivalent to a vice president or something of that sort. And as of January 78, then I become president. Well, the American Chemical Society, to get back to your question, is a society of individuals, all of whom are chemists. The membership at the moment stands at around 112,000. Most of them are U.S. citizens, but there are members of the society spread out all over the world. The organization is just now starting its 101st year. The organization is chartered as an educational, scientific, and professional organization. Would you like for me to go further, or is that enough?
One of the things that we say about the American Chemical Society is that it's the world's largest scientific organization.
That's not quite correct. It's the largest disciplinary organization. I think AAAS, the American Association for the Advancement of Science, has a membership that is a little larger. The last figure that I saw on that was around 120,000. But the American Association for the Advancement of Science is a multidiscipline. And actually, chemists may belong to it, but the number of chemists participating in that obviously is comparatively small as compared to the American Chemical Society. There are, of course, a number of other chemical societies. The one within the United States that has the largest membership of the ACS is the American Institute of Chemistry.
Is the American Medical Association considered to be a scientific organization or just a professional organization? Is it larger than the ACS?
I really don't know. I wondered about that. I sort of, certainly there are more physicians in the country than there are chemists. I did sort of a qualitative estimate of that a few days ago on seeing a directory of the physicians in the country, and obviously the total number of physicians is far exceeds the number of chemists. It's estimated that about 50% of the chemists in the country belong to the American Chemical Society. I don't really know enough about AMA to make valid statements. My impression is that over a long period of years, it has been more professionally oriented than the American Chemical Society, and the two organizations are quite different due to the nature of the kinds of things their members are involved in. Physicians, of course, are like physicians for the most part are directly employed by individuals. In other words, an individual very seldom pays a bill directly to a chemist, where an individual very frequently pays a bill directly to a physician. And this makes for quite different relationships, I'm quite sure, between the individual, be it a doctor or a chemist, and the employer. Chemists, for the most part, are employed by institutions, a wide variety. The largest number are employed by industry. But then, of course, you have all the academic institutions, you have all the government laboratories, and then you have a number of what are known not-for-profit institutions, foundations, and things of that sort. Actually, the number of chemists employed there are comparatively small to the other three classes.
Sounds like a pretty big job to run this kind of an organization. You are the first woman to be elected president of the American Chemical Society, right?
That's correct. Actually, the president doesn't run it in any sense. Their organization operates through a representative system. There is a council which has a membership of, I'm not quite sure what it is, must be in the vicinity of 400, which represents the various parts of the society, either local sections or divisions. And then there's a smaller group, which is, the board of directors. And the president of the society is, of course, a member of the council and also a board of the directors. The highest concentration of authority lies in the board. And as president of the society, you have a one vote in the same sense that the other members of the board have a vote.
Dr. Harrison,
yes.
What exactly does the American Chemical Society do?
Well, you try to do things that will enhance the ability of the individual scientist to be productive. This means then that you get involved in all kinds of things that have to do with the individual increasing their professional competence. You're concerned with the employment conditions of the individual.
Okay, could you stop again?
Now, wait a minute. Don't go away. In order to, you're interested in the enhancement of the science, the extension of scientific knowledge. This, of course, overlaps many of the things that are interested in the individual. It means, amongst other things, that you sponsor scientific meetings.
Dr. Harrison,
yes.
Could you speak up just a little bit, please?
Okay. Do you want me to go back and retract or not?
The last two sentences.
Okay. I'll start back on what the ACS does. That's going to give you a little more overlap than you want. Well, the American Chemical Society is, I'm going to do this in a slightly different order this time, is interested in promoting the extension of scientific knowledge, particularly in the chemical field. It's interested in promoting the welfare of the individual chemist, enhancing the individual's chemist capacity to be a constructive participant, to be productive. The American Chemical Society is interested in enhancing the ability of the institutions that employ chemists to be constructive and to be viable institutions. And then the overriding all of these has to do with the facilitating the use of chemical knowledge in the promotion of the general welfare of society. Now, these are its goals. What are the things it does? Well, amongst other things, it tries to promote exchange of information. This may be done through meetings, either locally or nationally. And one of the things that the American Chemical Society has been exceptionally active in and successful in has been in the field of publications.
Okay, that answers my question, Dr. Borman.
Dr. Harrison, you're the first woman to be elected president of the American Chemical Society, and as the president-elect and also as the president and as the immediate past president, you will be a member of the board of directors, is that correct?
That's correct.
Have there been other women that have served as national officers?
There are three other women on the board of directors currently. Mary Good was the first woman elected to the board, and that would, my guess, have been about 5 years ago. 6 years ago, maybe. There are two others. In other words, I guess every woman that has been a member of the board is currently still a member of the board.
So there are?
There are a total of four of us.
Total of four of you?
There are four of you.
I see. There are, as I understand it, 98% of the American Chemical Society are males.
No, that's not correct. There are at least 7% of the society that are women, and it may be higher than that now. I'm not quite sure. It might be as high as 9%.
Well, that's good. I'm glad to hear that.
That's been true for a long time. The 7% at least has been true for a long time.
Well, I'm glad to see that we're having a good representation of women in the national officers.
Well, this is new, and in a sense, as of this instant, women are overrepresented on the board. If you average over the century in which the society has been in existence, well, then, of course, we're the average isn't so impressive.
Well, it's interesting to note that in the bicentennial year of the United States and the centennial year of the American Chemical Society, we have elected our first woman president, and also that woman comes from Lindenwood College, and we are celebrating our sesquicentennial year.
Which is your sesquicentennial year? Is it this 77 or 78?
It's 77.
It's 77. I wasn't quite sure which
year it was. Well, hedge a little bit. Since you were elected in November, it's really close to 77.
Yes. Well, I came into office certainly in 77. I did not in any sense run as a woman candidate. I was very careful about this, and as far as I know, that was never raised as a campaign issue.
That's true. I recall your campaign, and you campaigned as a more as a chemist.
I campaigned as a chemist, and I think I was supported as a chemist. Certainly there's no question about it that I am a woman, and perhaps on that basis have somewhat different background, perhaps somewhat different interests. Certainly I did not campaign as a woman, and the places that I've appeared in an official capacity since elected within the American Chemical Society, it's been played absolute straight. That is, I've been introduced to officers' society without any reference to sex one way or the other.
What will you do as president-elect?
Well, as president-elect, you have some duties that are assigned to you in the way of responsibility for our you chair some committees of the society. Actually, the fact that you chair them makes a certain degree of sense. For instance, the awards committee, because you are then chairing a committee which is concerned with the selection of individuals for awards, but the awards will then be awarded in the year that you're president. And it doesn't mean, you know, that you, I don't even know whether I have a vote on those committees or not. In other words, that you particularly are powerful in the selection of the awardees, but just simply that's one of the things that you have responsibility for. You also are, of course, the back up to the president, and any time that the president cannot or chooses not to meet some assignment, then you fill in for it. There are some there are some things, of course, that are substantive, and then there are an awful lot of things which are ceremonial.
Dr. Harrison, how will this affect your job as a teacher or a professor at Mount Holyoke?
Well, it means I'm away from the campus a great deal. I will be, but I have been for the last several years away from the campus. I'm on the National Science Board, and it is the governing body for the National Science Foundation. And I think last year I was out of South Hadley, sufficiently to disrupt something like 50 days during the year. Now, this means, of course, that the college, before you get involved in these things, you discuss it with your chairman of your department, you discuss it with people from small institutions such as this is, you discuss it with the president of the institution, and you arrive at a sort of working basis in which they expect to give you some backup. For instance, essentially all the teaching I do now is involved with the team, not in the usual sense of team teaching, perhaps, but I always have someone in the course with me that, if I cannot be here, is perfectly able, as a matter of fact, as able as I am to take the course, so that the students are not disadvantaged by this. The college has arranged for me to have considerable more support in the way of secretarial help. Now, the thing that's taking most of my time now is that I'm trying to set up for us to discover the degree to which a society such as the American Chemical Society, which operates with volunteer service of its members for a large degree, in spite of the fact that we have a large office in Washington of professionals to back us up in these activities. Well, the activity that I'm primarily involved in now is to find out to what degree the American Chemical Society can interact with regulatory bodies. And the one that we are going to try to use as a learning exercise is the implementation of the Toxic Substance Control Act, the so-called TSCA. And so what I'm busily doing now is trying to set up a roster of people, largely in the United States, who have competence and experience in the area of toxic substances.
When you become president, will this take a great deal more time, and will you have to take a leave of absence from
Mount Hope? I will not take a leave. I don't think I really know how much time it'll take, and to a certain degree, you can keep it. You can keep certain controls on what you do. There are certain things you cannot keep control on what to do. You'll just expect it to appear, and you will. And I just don't think I really know what the consequences of that is.
Dr. Harrison, I'd like to talk a little bit now about the time that you were at Lindenwood, since this is our sesquicentennial year, and we're trying to find out what Lindenwood life was really like during earlier days, because I know that education has changed a lot. And my first question is, how did you get involved with Lindenwood?
I'm not quite sure how I got involved with Lindenwood. My original, I think I never had any questions, but then I would go to a college for women for at least the first 2 years. Lindenwood was not the college that I had thought that I was going to go to. As a matter of fact, I was registered in another college, and then on visiting that institution, somewhat disappointed in it, and changed to Lindenwood. While I was still a senior in high school, in that time, one didn't register for college quite as early as one does now. And in the second semester, senior year in college, two students and a principal of the high school, drove down to Lindenwood, and we spent a day there. Now, why this arrangement got set up rather than parents being involved, I really haven't any idea. It was not an institution that I think he had been primarily interested in, because he'd come from the East and would have been more interested in the Eastern institution. But anyway, we spent a very pleasant day there.
Could you speak up a little bit?
We spent a very pleasant day at Lindenwood, and that's where I decided to go.
Were you already interested in chemistry, and did Lindenwood have a chemistry program for you, or did you get started on chemistry after you got to college?
Well, I think at that time I was a little naive about inquiring into what the academic resources of an institution were. I just assumed they would be good. My interest in chemistry, in the sciences, was quite evident in the high school year, and I think I had no doubt that I would major either in a physical science or in mathematics. But at the time I entered college, I don't think I had any particular commitment one way or the other. As a matter of fact, my first semester, I took botany, and I did not get... And I took chemistry, I guess, in the second semester. We were in the system then of science courses being 5 credits, 1 semester courses. That's what you're operating on now.
We were wondering, on your form that you filled out and sent to the alumni office, you said you were here in 28 and 29, I believe. But we
That's incorrect.
Pardon me?
I think that must be... Now, wait a minute. I graduated from college in 33... at the end of 4 years at the University of Missouri, so I think it should have been 29, 30. Now, wait a minute. Somebody do the arithmetic on that.
I think it would it be 30 and 31, and then your last 2 years were 32 and 33.
29, 30, 30, 31,
Okay, that's what we wanted to clear up, because Dr. Borman had found a little vial in the lab with 31 that was supposedly yours or something.
Yes. Matter of fact, he shipped it to me.
What did you like best about Lindenwood when you were going here?
Oh, that's a question. You know, it never occurs to me whether I like things or not, or why I like them.
Well, maybe
I don't think I can give you a very good answer there. I think there was one at the time I was there were two people in the chemistry department. And both of those I enjoyed and had a great deal of respect for. Mary Lear, who was chairman of the department, and a woman of some experience in teaching. And the other was Major McMasters, who was between a master's degree and going back to take a PhD. I think maybe Major McMaster, talk more about women being involved in professions, etc., than anyone else did. And I suspect my commitment in the sense of becoming involved professionally in a continuing basis may go back pretty much to her. And it so happened in terms of the courses that I took, I had her for more courses than I had Miss Lear.
We were wondering where the chemistry labs and your classes and the such were located when you were going to school here.
Okay. If you... Essentially, all of the academic work except art and music were in, is it Romer Hall, the administration building?
Right.
Okay. And if you faced Romer Hall from the inside of the campus, along where that swing is, there used to be.
Yeah.
The science laboratories were all on the top floor. They were all on the side, the physics and chemistry were on the side that you would be facing from the inside of the campus. Biology was across the hall, which was faced out the other direction. Chemistry laboratories would have been a little bit to the right of the main entrance, top floor, but sort of down towards that end of the building. And as a matter of fact, I guess they went all the way down to the corner of the building because I think the freshman lab I had, I was at a bench that was a half bench, not students on both sides of it, and I was facing a window which would look towards where the library is now. The library was also in that building when I went there. Then on the first floor and to the on the street side of the campus.
Dr. Harrison, you described the laboratories. When I arrived in 1965, that's exactly the way they were.
There was a laboratory, a little prep room, a large office, a lecture room, and two laboratories, is that it?
Yes, ma'am, that's the way it was in 1965.
Yeah, well, I suspect it stayed just exactly. Well, as a matter of fact, I was back there as a visiting scientist that would have been shortly before you came. And the floor, physical layout was exactly the same.
What took you to the University of Missouri?
Well, when it became evident that I was going to be interested in the physical sciences, and quite frankly, the college suggested that I transfer. That at that time, there were only two people in the chemistry department, one person in physics. I guess the one person in physics was also teaching mathematics. And for reasons I did not know then, didn't inquire into, as a matter of fact, there had decided to cut the chemistry department back to one instructor. At that time, the junior and senior years had comparatively few students in them. And insofar as they could anticipate, I might be the only one that would be majoring in chemistry in the junior or senior year. And it was, just made known to me that it might be to my advantage, and I suspect also to their advantage, in the sense of being able to cover enough material for someone who is getting serious about the science to transfer to the university, and so I did.
Dr. Harrison, could you tell me from an educational viewpoint, what are the differences between, say, Lindenwood, which was a small private school when you were going to school, and Mount Holyoke, which is now, it's a small private school, it's larger than Lindenwood, but I'm sure that there are differences that you've seen over the years, and what kind of trends, and how good are they, or how bad are they?
Well, I'd rather make, I think, the comparisons within Mount Holyoke over the years I've known it, rather than make it seem to be a comparison between Lindenwood and Mount Holyoke, because
okay.
The time span is so different.
Okay.
Well, for one thing, in the East, there was not the sort of strong custom of going to a college for 2 years and transferring to the university. As a matter of fact, there wasn't a state university in Massachusetts until comparatively recent years. So the Mount Holyoke has a longer period of the upper 2 years being more comparable in size to the enrollment of the first 2 years, which makes somewhat of a difference in the educational pattern. Now, I have no idea what the distribution at Lindenwood now is. The since I've been here, I think, and now I'm talking only within Linden, within Mount Holyoke itself, there's a great deal more freedom, much less in the way of restrictions, much more emphasis, I think, on the maximum educational opportunity that is available to the student, rather than quite as much emphasis on being sure that each student achieves a certain minimum level. In other words, it's not the policing to enforce a standard, but providing the opportunity for one to achieve. I find the students more exciting than I ever have to teach, and I enjoy working with them more than I ever have. I find that they're maybe perhaps not as competent in some of the mechanics. You know, they really don't multiply very well or divide through long division very well, that sort of thing. But I find they have a greater mathematical sense of what the operation should be. And quite frankly, I couldn't care less if they're using a calculator of some sort to carry out the operation. I find students intellectually more free-feeling. I'm not sure it's to say that they're more curious, but they're more willing to range free